negative charge, and it's possible for these negative and positive ions to cancel each other out. Every day we deal with an excess of positive ions coming from our cell phones, TVs, microwave ovens, light bulbs, and indoor environmental pollution. It may sound counterintuitive, but in my belief, negative ions have the greatest benefit on our physical and mental health. They increase our body's alkalinity and serotonin levels and accelerate healing and recovery, while amplifying our levels of pliability. Can you overhydrate? Alex and I both believe there's an optimal point of hydration, and theoretically, you can overhydrate in the same way you can overdo anything. You can also reach a point where your body has taken in so much water in so short a period that it can't metabolize it. But in reality, this happens to people so rarely that it shouldn't be a top concern. The larger issue is that most people are underhydrated relative to the optimal pliability levels we recommend at TB12. Developing a water routine. Step-by-step basics. Where hydration is concerned, balance and pacing are important. As usual, don't do everything at once. Work toward proper hydration step by step, line by line, precept by precept. Drinking at least one half of your body weight in ounces of water every day is a great place to start. Drinking those ounces of water enhanced with electrolytes is even better. It has taken me many years to get into a great routine, but I know I will have great hydration for the rest of my life. Drink one or two glasses of water when you first wake up. Drink a glass or two of water with electrolytes when you wake up, but be sure to wait half an hour before you eat breakfast. And don't drink water while you're eating. It gets in the way of optimally digesting foods and absorbing their nutrients. Spread out your hydration during the day. Try not to drink all your water at the same time. Space out your water drinking over the course of the day. In general, it's not good to drink more than 4 8-ounce glasses during a 1 hour period. If you weigh 160 pounds, via our rule of thumb, you should be drinking at least 80 ounces of water per day. Assuming you're up by 8 a.m. and in bed by 10:30 p.m., that's a glass of water every couple of hours. I carry a water bottle with me wherever I go, and I make sure I'm always properly hydrated. Limit drinking water during meals. Try not to drink too much water during a meal, as it can interfere with digestion. Wait an hour or so after you're done eating before you drink water, since water washes away the body's natural enzymes, which break down your food. Rule of thumb: drink more water before and after meals than during meals. TB12 action steps. Hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. Drink at least one half of your body weight in ounces every day, and more if you can. Add electrolytes to your water as often as possible. Reduce or eliminate your intake of caffeine, soda, and alcohol. All three can be dehydrating. If you drink coffee, soda, or alcohol, rebalance your hydration by drinking 2 glasses of water for every one of those beverages you consume. Remember that if we don't drink enough water, our lymphatic system can't flush out the built-up toxins in our bodies. That's one reason why keeping well hydrated is key to our overall health. Hydration and pliability are interdependent. How fast or slowly you develop pliable muscles depends to a large extent on how well hydrated you are. Water in our bodies. Why hydration matters. Our bodies are made up of anywhere from 60 to 80% water, and our muscles alone are 75% water. Water aids in brain function, ensures healthy metabolism, digestion, and kidney function, helps circulate oxygen in the bloodstream, lubricates joints, and ensures proper muscle function. Proper hydration helps restore the body's natural percentage of water while creating optimal pliability. Chapter 8. Nutrition. By now, hopefully you realize that pliability doesn't refer only to targeted deep force muscle work. You can do pliability treatments and work out every day, but if you don't pay attention to what you put inside your body, or if you ignore the connection between good nutrition and healthy muscles, then you're not giving yourself the opportunity to achieve your peak performance. It really doesn't matter how much exercise you do if you're not eating the right food and providing your body the right nutrients. One important point to remember goes back to one of the principles of the TB12 method, balance. You need to optimize and maintain your pliability even when you're not in the gym or on the field. To do that, proper nutrition is critical. What's more, the type of nutritional regimen you choose will either promote or reduce inflammation. That's why after pliability training and making sure I drink enough water every day, the next most important choice I make as an athlete centers on nutrition. During the season, I know I'll be hit hard every Sunday, and I will be dealing with negative unintentional traumas that lead to inflammation responses in my body. I also know my body will generate trauma responses to deal with the line of duty soreness and pain I feel. On and off the field, my goal is to avoid additional inflammation on top of the inflammation I get from playing football. Every Monday after a game, for example, the whole team comes into the weight room to bench press, squat, and do other weight-bearing activities. The way I see it, they are creating more trauma in addition to the car crash our bodies were experiencing less than 24 hours earlier. Knowing my body needs to recover after a game, I'm careful about how I train on Mondays. I do enough to keep my strength optimal and my muscles firing at 100%, but I stop short of generating additional inflammation. Younger athletes may be able to get away with this routine because of their natural pliability. But as a 40-year-old athlete, I have to think differently about my time allocation, as discussed previously. That extends to my nutritional regimen. After Monday practice, and with Tuesdays off, a lot of players will go home and not think much about their nutritional choices. I was that way myself in my early 20s. If I was going to work out and play hard, I told myself, I could be as undisciplined with my nutrition as I wanted. Back then, I didn't give much thought to what I ate, so long as I stayed in the 220 to 30 pound weight range. Of course, not all calories are created equal. The calories you get from an apple are different from the ones you get from an apple pie. It's the nutrients in the apple that can help accelerate recovery and reduce inflammation. And a big reason why I can recover from Sunday's game significantly faster than players who may be 10 or 15 years younger than me. Some younger players don't give too much thought to nutrition. They think they can eat anything they want, and their bodies will burn off the damage. The problem is that by eating inflammatory foods, they're eating things that create inflammation on top of the weightlifting they've done on top of the football game they just played on Sunday. That's an inflammation response times three. As I said, if I know my body will experience inflammation every Sunday during the season, the last thing I want to do is stack on more inflammation on top of it. Not if I want to feel great every time I take the field. That's why for the past 10 years, I followed a pretty disciplined nutritional regimen. It's based on eating fresh, seasonal, organic foods from authentic and, ideally, local sources. I also subscribe to the philosophy and principle of eating 80% alkaline-forming and 20% acid-causing foods. What that means in practical terms is that, while I'm not a vegetarian by any means, I do subscribe to a commonsensical, mostly plant-based, plant-heavy, and seasonal nutritional regimen. What we're learning from the slow food and farm-to-table movements is that if the food we eat is grown naturally and locally, and we avoid processed foods, we're already doing our bodies and minds a big favor. For these reasons, I try to eat only real food. Food that comes from nature rather than from industrial sources. A lot of what we buy and eat today is sold to us as natural when it isn't, or else it's so watered down or pumped full of additives, chemicals, and preservatives that it has almost nothing in common with the real thing. The regimen I follow is a mix of Eastern and Western philosophies. Some of these principles have been around for thousands of years. My nutritional regimen may seem restrictive to some people, but to me it feels unnatural to eat any other way. Many people have conditioned their bodies to a nutritional regimen made up of lots of white or pale-looking foods, French fries, potato chips, white bread, chicken nuggets, that don't exist in nature. A friend once told me that when his son was asked in school where ketchup came from, he said a bottle. He had no idea that the source of ketchup is supposed to be tomatoes. Still, it's never too late to teach children how to eat right. If children learn nothing else but the principle of eating more real food and fewer processed or refined foods, it won't just benefit their pliability, it will also help reduce obesity levels and help them feel healthier and more energetic. The principles behind my nutritional regimen have nothing to do with fads or trends. As you go over them, and more important, the specifics of what I eat, remember that this is what works for me in my life and my job. Everybody is different. Changing a nutritional regimen isn't easy, I know that. Modify things at your own pace. As always, try cutting out or adding something here, something there. Halfway measures are better than no measures at all. Try to figure out what works best for you, and if it gives you more energy or improves your performance, you're on the right path. General guidelines. The do's. Eat as much real, organic, and local food as you can. I eat foods that are as fresh as possible, and most of the time that means I choose to eat organic foods. Their nutrient content is much higher than the foods you find in the supermarket, and organic foods don't have any of the pesticides, preservatives, stabilizers, growth hormones, and other chemicals the commercial food industry uses to grow and preserve food. Even if you eat only a small percentage of organic foods, you'll have more energy and you'll feel more satisfied. Why? Because the chemicals in some industrial foods stimulate natural chemicals in our brains that block leptin, a protein that governs our metabolism and that creates a feeling of fullness during meals. Basically, the chemicals that food companies put in our foods increase food cravings. Our brains never turn off. They're always hungry. Nutrient-dense, high-fiber foods, on the other hand, not only give us more energy, but also, thanks to their natural fiber content, make us feel fuller, faster, and with smaller servings. If eating 100% organic food isn't an option, focus instead on eating real food, whether you buy it at a supermarket, a farm stand, or through a farm share program. Most food sold locally is real food, and most of the time close enough to organic. The difference being that local farmers may not have devoted the time, expense, and paperwork needed to get official U.S. Department of Agriculture organic certification. Real food is also local and seasonal. Unlike industrial processed food, which puts old things or ingredients in new products or packages, real food never changes, and eating real food makes the most sense. Humans have been eating vegetables, fruits, meat, and fish for centuries. It may go without saying, but whether you buy fruits and vegetables in the supermarket or at a local health food store, always wash them before eating them. Eat mostly vegetables. Vegetables are high in nutrients, fiber, and enzymes. I try to eat as many as I can at every meal. I also try to eat some percentage of vegetables either raw or lightly steamed. Very high cooking temperatures can strip away the nutrient and enzyme content of vegetables, and raw foods also have an alkalizing effect on the body. I'll be talking more about alkalizing foods later in this chapter, but as I've gotten smarter about eating, I've moved toward adopting an alkalizing diet, and most vegetables are alkalizing. The benefits of vegetables and their alkalizing effects is that they promote less inflammation than other foods do, and create healthier muscles, which leads to optimal pliability, and helps maintain great vitality and peak performance. A mostly whole food plant-based nutritional regimen is one centered on vegetables, fruits, whole grains, and legumes. It limits meat and fish, dairy products, and any refined processed foods, including flours, sugars, and oils. When people ask if I'm a vegan or a vegetarian, I tell them no, decidedly not. I may be plant and vegetable focused, but I also eat meat, chicken, and fish in limited amounts. If anything, I subscribe to balance. In grade school, we all learned to eat in a balanced way, the difference being that we now have a better idea about how to achieve that balance and are smarter about the differences between real foods and processed or refined ones. Eat local foods whenever possible. In general, the more local your food is, the better. The fruits and vegetables you see in the supermarket have been shipped anywhere from 1,500 to 2,000 miles on average to get there. They've been packed in styrofoam in trucks and on planes, and by the time you see them on the shelves, they're a week to 10 days old. And the average apple for sale in a U.S. grocery store was picked up to 10 months ago. Most have likely been frozen and thawed out at least once. With national soil levels nutrient-deprived to begin with, the vitamins and minerals in the fruits and vegetables we buy have degraded even more. When food travels, it begins a long, slow death. This slow death depletes the nutrients of the food we eat, so our bodies are never really being nourished with what we need for optimum health. The principle behind my eating habits is simple. I want to eat food in ways that maximize its nutritional value. The more concentrated my nutrition, the fresher it is, and the more local and organic, the better it is for me. I know that local and organic food often costs more, but the way I see it, I'm making up those savings in decreased healthcare costs in the long run. And, most important, I feel better and have performed better as I've eaten healthier. It's impossible to eat the cheapest foods while also eating the best foods. Eating healthy is an investment I make in myself. We all have one body and one life. I've made it a priority to treat that body and life as respectfully as possible. Eat seasonally. In my experience, my body needs and responds to different foods depending on the climate where I live, and also on what season it is. I know, for example, that following a mostly plant-based nutritional regimen is good for my health, but that's because I live in New England most of the year. If I were living in a place like Alaska, where the climate is colder and darker for a longer period of the year, my diet would need to shift to incorporate a higher percentage of fat and protein, which counteract the cold temperatures outside. It's all about balance. That's why your environment and what you ask your body to do in it is a big part of determining what nutritional regimen best suits you. In some medical traditions, there are certain warm property foods that are higher in fat and protein, while other foods, known as cold property foods, are lower in fat. On hot summer days, it feels more natural to cook or eat foods that are light or cool, like salad or fruit. On colder days, our cravings naturally skew towards stews or soups. A few warm weather foods that cool the body include cucumbers, asparagus, avocados, broccoli, and celery. A list of the cold weather foods are root vegetables, fennel, oats, quinoa, and rutabaga. Some foods fall in the middle. They're neither warm weather nor cold weather, and are considered neutral. Apricots, beets, grapes, green beans, lentils, pineapples, potatoes, and raspberries. These principles are thousands of years old, and they make intuitive sense. A good rule of thumb is to observe the seasons and eat whatever foods are locally available in the climate you inhabit. Spring vegetables in the spring, fall vegetables in the fall. If one food feels more summery and another feels more wintry, they probably are. Once I understood this concept, I became more aware of what I ate and when I ate it, and why I was better off eating more meat in the winter than during the summer. When I could feel the difference in my body, the habit stuck. The bottom line is, I try to eat as seasonally as possible. This nutritional regimen works for me, and I would expect it to give you the same results. But again, take your time. Making changes in your nutrition is challenging, so start slowly and build on your positive results. Consume essential fatty acids. Many believe the best sources of dietary fat are essential fatty acids, especially omega-3 and omega-6 fats. These can be found in sardines, wild game, flaxseed and flaxseed oil, walnuts, pumpkin seeds, and canola oil. The media and most high-profile diets would have us believe that fat is the enemy, but the truth is our bodies require a certain daily percentage of fats. Fats create insulation in our bodies, stabilize our body temperatures, give us more energy, transport oxygen, and help us absorb fat-soluble vitamins. Best of all, they act as natural anti-inflammatories. Omega-3 fatty acids, which are concentrated in the brain, have been shown to enhance both memory and performance. Eat foods high in fiber. Along with essential fatty acids, I also make sure my diet has lots of fiber in it. The best fiber sources out there are fruits, vegetables, bran, rolled oats, brown rice, and various other complex carbohydrates. High fiber diets are associated with a reduced incidence of heart disease, high blood pressure, and of certain kinds of cancer and GI conditions. Eat a variety of foods. I try to eat as wide an assortment of foods as I can every day. Different foods contain different nutrients and minerals, and no single food can give your body exactly what it needs. Even if you eat spinach 3 meals a day, you're missing out on dozens of other nutrients your body needs to achieve optimal health. Just as you shouldn't get all your greens from spinach, you shouldn't get all your protein from a piece of beef. By varying the foods you eat, you also avoid boredom. As part of the TB12 method, I've also created a line of healthy snacks and protein bars that help me refuel in between meals. They're raw, nutrient-rich, and alkalizing, and a regular part of my diet. We at TB12 also work with a great meal delivery service that aligns with the goals of TB12 to provide meals that make the type of eating we subscribe to at TB12 available for everybody. Their food is nutrient-rich and tastes great. I've been eating it all year on a weekly basis, and I feel great results. If you're lacking for time, this could be a great solution for you. Foods to limit or avoid, the don'ts. Avoid refined carbohydrates. The negative effects of eating too many refined carbohydrates, which are in junk foods and fast foods, include excessive insulin production, excessive fat storage, and elevated blood sugar levels. I try to keep my insulin levels balanced, since the more stable they are, the lower my inflammation rates will be. For that reason, I try to avoid eating anything that comes in a box or a bag, as well as foods containing white flour or added sugars. That means I try to limit cereal, white bread, white rice, pasta, cakes, and cookies. Less inflammation is the key for me. Avoid unhealthy fats. Trans fatty acids and saturated fats are both found in hydrogenated oils, which are used in the commercial production of cookies, crackers, peanut butter, and breakfast cereals. Hydrogenation is the process of turning healthy oils into solids to keep them from going bad. Basically, Trans fats are the worst kind of fat out there. If hydrogenated or partially hydrogenated oils appear on the label's ingredients list, try to avoid that product. If a food has fewer than 0.5 grams of trans fat in it per serving, by law, its label is allowed to say 0 grams of trans fat. So always read the label. Trans fats not only create inflammation, but are also linked to heart disease, diabetes, and stroke. Saturated fats, which are found in red meat, milk, butter, cheese, palm oil, and coconut oil, also increase the risk of heart disease. Of the two, saturated fats are better than trans fats, but try to limit your consumption of foods containing either. I will very rarely eat anything with these types of fats. Limit dairy. The protein in dairy products, cow's milk, cheese, ice cream, yogurt, increases inflammation in both the digestive tract and the thyroid gland, which means your body is less able to absorb the right nutrients. When I was a kid, the dairy industry rolled out lots of campaigns urging people to drink lots of milk. Remember milk mustaches? I actually did that campaign back in 2002. But research today is pretty clear that we should consume dairy in more limited amounts. Our belief at TB12 is that dairy products are high in calories and lower in nutritional value than other foods. And milkshakes, cheeseburgers, and ice cream every night isn't going to make for a healthy diet, certainly not when you expect your body to perform at the highest levels. Limit salt. Our bodies need salt, but too much of it elevates blood pressure and interferes with our ability to eliminate toxins and waste from our cells. If you use salt, at least taste your food first, or use just a small pinch of salt rather than overdoing it. There's a big difference between seasoning your food and flavoring it so completely that you can barely taste it. One of the problems I have with food that isn't real is that most of the time, our palates are responding to one of three ingredients: salt, sugar, or fat. Whenever the media claims that some of the dietary methods I pursue are new agey or even quackery, I tell them that some of the biggest advertisers on television and in the stadiums I've played in, are marketing all the wrong things. Which message seems more sensible? It's common to see soda or alcohol commercials infiltrating every part of popular culture. I advocate for seeing more types of healthy food choices in advertising to help balance these out. Limit nightshades. Nightshades are a family of darker plants and foods that include mushrooms, eggplants, potatoes, strawberries, and bell peppers. Nightshades are a really great source of antioxidants. Now, eating vegetables like tomatoes and eggplant won't affect most people's performance levels. But again, as an NFL quarterback, I need to do everything possible to maximize my pliability and minimize even small amounts of inflammation. For that reason, I rarely eat dark-shaded vegetables. Again, my diet is engineered and matched to the job I need my body to do. As long as I play pro football, I'll be as disciplined as possible. At some point in my life, this may relax, but my diet has become so natural and ingrained that I can't really imagine any large changes in the future. Put another way, I enjoy how I eat and what I eat, and I never feel I'm missing out. Which brings me to the two things many adults indulge in: caffeine and alcohol. Limit caffeine. Roughly half of all Americans are addicted to coffee, tea, or soda. Drinking moderate amounts of coffee, 200 milligrams of caffeine a day, which is about 2 cups of coffee, is harmless. But too much caffeine can lead to a wide range of health problems, not to mention edginess and stress. More to the point, caffeine can be dehydrating. I steer clear. If you're going to drink caffeine, you'd better stick to the 2-to-1 rule of thumb I mentioned earlier. Limit alcohol. If you drink alcohol, do so only in moderation. Too much alcohol is linked to hypertension, diabetes, obesity, and impaired liver function. But again, the biggest problem for me is that alcohol is a diuretic, and therefore is dehydrating. Alcohol is full of sugar, too, and for that reason alone it creates inflammation. From time to time I'll have a beer, and when I'm in a social setting, maybe a few drinks. But in general, I don't drink alcohol with my meals or as a standalone drink. In fact, at this point in my life, I rarely drink alcohol at all. If I do, I make sure I compensate for the loss in hydration by drinking twice that amount in water the next day. Alkaline versus acidic foods. In addition to eating as much real food as possible, I also follow a nutritional regimen that's made up of 80% alkaline and 20% acidic foods. In general, foods that are acidic cause inflammation, and alkaline-forming foods reduce inflammation. To explain, every food we eat mixes with the oxygen in our body's cells to create energy. Whenever we digest and metabolize a food, it forms a signature inside the body. That ash is either acidic, alkaline, or neutral. The body's optimal pH range, pH is a measurement of the hydrogen ion concentration in our bodies, is around 7. A pH range below 7 means the body is too acidic. When we maintain good pH levels, the body is properly oxygenated, which accelerates recovery and healing. Alkaline or neutral ash helps the body thrive, whereas eating too many acidifying foods leads to a condition called acidosis, which makes us more prone to infections, colds, flu, low energy, fatigue, sore muscles, joint pain, hip fractures, bone spurs, poor concentration, and mood swings. All of these things are opposite to what I need as an athlete. Strongly acidifying foods include white rice, bread, butter, cheese, yogurt, and beef. The optimal goal is an 80-20 balance between alkalizing and acidifying foods, and a pH balance of 7. By decreasing the percentage of acidifying foods in your diet, your body is better able to neutralize whatever acids it produces during digestion and protect itself from further acidity. The foundation of an alkalizing meal is vegetables. All vegetables have lots of vitamins, alkalizing minerals, salts, enzymes, nutrients, and fiber. Again, try to eat as many green vegetables as you can. They're rich in chlorophyll, which gives them their green color, along with beets, green cabbage, carrots, cauliflower, garlic, onions, radishes, bell peppers, and squash. Still, don't eliminate acidifying foods altogether. No matter how acidic your pH levels are, your body still needs some acidic protein-rich foods to work properly. We all need some percentage of acidifying protein to establish alkaline minerals in our muscles in the first place, and protein in turn helps our muscles retain alkaline minerals. By following a nutritional regimen of around 80% alkaline or alkalizing foods, and the remaining balance of 20% more acidifying foods, I try to keep my body in a naturally alkaline state. I try to eat alkalizing foods at every meal, and I spread them out during the day, too. A healthy diet means less inflammation, more energy, and faster recovery. These things align with TB12's philosophies, and they work great for me. The food industry. The way we eat has changed more in the past 50 years than it has in the previous 10,000. There are around 40,000 products for sale in a supermarket. Most are manufactured by one of the 10 or so multinationals that control our country's trillion-dollar industrial food system. Most people define food as any substance we eat that provides proteins, fats, carbohydrates, vitamins, and minerals. Our body's cells absorb and metabolize these nutrients, which in turn give us energy and ensure continuing growth in our bones and muscles. But most of what we buy in the supermarket are food-like products or compounds marketed and sold to us as food. They're not food. They're refinements or inventions that someone made up. Consider what the industry does to fruits and vegetables, too. Green apples, bananas, and tomatoes ripened by ethylene gas are available all year round. But are those real? Moreover, a lot of studies show that the mineral content of our soil has declined steadily since the 1950s, along with the nutritional value of the fruits and vegetables that grow in the soil. The way I see it, food companies are more like chemical companies than anything else. But we keep eating what they sell us, and then wondering why the rates of disease and obesity are so high. Our bodies become toxic when we ingest toxic chemicals. Just go into the grocery store and scan the ingredients on a can of soup or a jar of peanut butter. Ascorbic acid, high fructose corn syrup, potassium chloride, citric acid, sodium caseinate, silicon dioxide, turmeric sodium carbonate, monopotassium phosphate, fully hydrogenated vegetable oils. Then, of course, there's genetic engineering. Does that sound like something you'd want to eat? It sounds like a chemistry experiment to me. When I think about food, I picture an avocado, a banana, a salad, a handful of nuts, or a piece of fish. I don't picture a box of cereal, a tub of margarine, a box of donuts, a bag of potato chips, or anything else manufactured using salt, sugar, fat, additives, stabilizers, and chemicals. Food should look like, smell like, and taste like food. I'm not saying to never eat the foods I just mentioned, as I know they taste good and are marketed well, but try to limit them and eat more real, organic, local food. If you can't eat right. Sometimes I'm in a situation where it's not possible to eat the things I want. When that happens, I do the best I can and focus on enjoying my night out. If the only options on a menu are pasta, pizza, or even cheeseburgers, I'll order a cheeseburger. I just won't order two or three of them, or I'll eat half. I may love the taste, but I know that eating cheeseburgers or pizza won't help me accomplish my athletic goals. To me, it's about prioritizing. My regimen works for what I'm asking my body to do. In the end, it's balance in all things. Please refer to the accompanying PDF for a short list of strongly alkalizing foods and strongly acidifying foods. Portion sizes. The cut of meat, chicken, or fish you eat shouldn't be any bigger than the size of your palm. It should be accompanied by at least 2 palms worth of vegetables. As a general rule, it's good to leave the table feeling 75% full. That way your body can digest and absorb the food you've eaten more easily. Here's a tip. If I'm in a restaurant and I order something savory, like fish or a steak, I make sure to order a lot of vegetables on the side. I eat them first, so by the time I get to the steak, I'm already pretty full. If I ate the steak first, I would have less room for the vegetables. In general, I try to eat what's good for me first, like the nutrient-rich vegetables, and save the stuff that's less good for me last. How much added sugar should you be eating every day? We get a lot of sugar naturally from the fruits and vegetables we eat. Athletes who burn a lot of calories can get away with eating up to 50 grams of added sugar a day. But for most people, I wouldn't recommend more than 25 grams per day. Again, I try to limit sugar as it raises insulin and creates inflammation. As you know by now, inflammation is the enemy for an athlete. Timing between eating and rest. Try to give yourself around 3 hours from when you finish dinner to the time you go to bed. The body's metabolic burn rate starts slowing down at night, and sleep is when our bodies should be recovering from the day's activities. That's why eating late at night isn't a great idea. Your body can't prepare for recovery when it's digesting the food you've just eaten. Snacking. Snacking is normal, especially in the late morning and mid-afternoon. But if you experience food cravings throughout the day, your body is telling you it's nutrient-deprived. If you're eating real food, your body should be metabolizing the nutrients you've taken in. You're better off modifying your diet and adding more nutrient-dense meals over the course of the day. Still, try to snack throughout the day. It curbs your appetite, helps you retain energy, and lowers your chance of overeating during meals. I snack quite a bit throughout the day myself, and at TB12 we created an assortment of snacks I eat just so I know I have healthy choices available that I also love to eat. Combining foods. The foods we eat, fruits, vegetables, grains, meat, each belong to specific food groups. We digest each one more easily or with more difficulty, depending on what other foods we pair with them. When we digest, say, protein-rich foods like beef or chicken, our bodies require an acidic environment. When we digest carbohydrates, our bodies require a more alkaline environment. In this case, opposites don't attract. Here are four principles to keep in mind. 1. Try to avoid eating proteins like meat, poultry, fish, or dairy with carbohydrates like potatoes, breads, wheat, or grain products. 2. Mixing vegetables, cooked or raw, with either proteins or carbohydrates is ideal and won't interfere with good digestion. 3. Eat fruits alone. They digest quickly. Other foods don't. 4. Drinking water with your meals can interfere with good digestion. Drink water half an hour before a meal, and then wait an hour before you have your next glass. If you're going to drink with your meals, I recommend only a little bit of water in order to ensure proper digestion. Supplementation. Even if you eat fresh, organically grown food at every meal, it can be tricky to meet your nutritional needs. Various other factors may be working against you. Noise and air pollution, food pesticides, even your own stress levels. A lot of people don't have access to locally grown or organic food. And even if they do manage to eat real food, a lot of times it's flown cross-country and shipped frozen from warehouses along the way. Would I love it if everyone started following a mostly plant-based real food nutritional regimen? Absolutely. But not everyone can do that. At TB12, we use the word supplement as it's intended to be used, as a supplementation to the foods we eat. The right supplements won't replace a proper nutritional regimen, but they can ensure you get what your body might be lacking. I'm a big believer in the smart use of certain supplements. They've been a regular part of my daily routine since 2000. As I said earlier, along with daily doses of electrolytes and trace mineral drops, I also take a daily multivitamin, vitamin D, vitamin B complex, an antioxidant, essential fish oils, protein powder, and a probiotic. The TB12 method is about quality of life, and the supplements I take help me sustain peak performance and promote muscle regeneration. Whenever I read news articles casting doubt on supplements or saying they don't work, I take them at face value. All I can do is look back on my own experience and track record. I do less strength training today than ever before, and my muscles are healthier than ever. Multivitamin. A multivitamin is a good supplement for average people as well as for athletes. It supplements the basic vitamins and minerals we get from our food. Vitamin D. Vitamin D helps our bodies absorb calcium by regulating how we metabolize both calcium and phosphorus. It helps our bones and our teeth, and aids in the regulation of our nervous system, cardiovascular health, and blood clot function. Vitamin D is found in egg yolks, liver, milk, and in oily fish like salmon, herring, mackerel, and sardines. If you have a vitamin D deficiency, you risk bone softening, osteoporosis, and muscle spasms, which is why I take the daily recommended dose. I suggest taking vitamin D2 and D3. Vitamin B complex. B complex, which is made up of a group of 8 distinct B vitamins, increases our energy by helping to convert food into glucose and metabolizes the health of our nervous and immune systems. Trace minerals. Even if we eat real food every day of our lives, thanks to commercial farming, we don't get the minerals from the soil our bodies need. Trace minerals work alongside the vitamins and nutrients in our bodies to regulate biological functions, ranging from proper blood formation to energy production to nerve transmission. They also help our bodies regulate the balance between acidity and alkalinity. The most important trace minerals are calcium, copper, magnesium, boron, phosphorus, potassium, silica, and zinc. I get all of these in my TB12 electrolytes, which are critical in replacing the minerals I lose in my sweat when I work out. Antioxidants. I get most of my antioxidants from fruits and vegetables, except for nightshades, and I need the extra insurance that antioxidants provide. They protect the body from the damage caused by free radicals, which can lead to atherosclerosis and various other arthritis-related conditions. Again, it's all about reducing inflammation. Essential fatty acids. Our bodies need certain kinds of fat to carry out daily acts of living. Most people don't get enough of these because the word fat scares them. Our bodies don't naturally produce essential fatty acids, which means we need to get them from our diets or from supplementation. Essential fatty acids, especially DHA and DEPA, help with energy, musculoskeletal function, and calcium metabolism, as well as hormone, nerve, and brain function. They also help reduce the risks of heart attack, hypertension, and stroke, as well as overall inflammation. I have found these to be a great benefit in my life. Protein powder. Our bodies require a certain amount of daily protein. At TB12, we only use the purest protein possible and avoid the use of sugar, fat, binders, or stabilizers. It has greatly improved my ability to maintain muscle mass while strength training less than half of what I used to in my 20s. I can add 1 or 2 scoops of protein powder to anything I eat, from pancakes to smoothies. Probiotics. Probiotics are live microorganisms that naturally produce digestive enzymes that help your body digest food and absorb the nutrients from that food. 70 to 80% of your immune system resides in your gut bacteria. Antibiotics destroy your inner stomach environment, and over a long period of time can affect your digestion. That's why probiotics are so important to me. Protein powder and the 20-minute rule. When athletes work out, they break down their muscles. Two of the best sources of protein and carbs are either a protein bar or 20 grams of protein powder mixed into a protein shake. Protein is easily and quickly digestible and goes immediately toward rebuilding and repairing muscles. To facilitate muscle repair and generate muscle protein synthesis, you should ingest protein within 20 minutes of finishing your workout. Wait any longer, and your body will begin seeking its own protein sources and start tearing down the muscles you've just been building up. I am committed to the 20-minute rule, and rarely will I break down my muscles without having a protein shake immediately following intense workouts. How to read a label. Everyone who's been in a supermarket knows that supplement is a pretty broad category that includes vitamins, minerals, herbs, green drinks, essential fatty acids, and other nutrients that are either derived or synthesized from food sources. According to the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act of 1994, supplements aren't considered drugs, which means they can go to market without the U.S. Food and Drug Administration reviewing them beforehand. To choose the right supplements, it's important to choose a brand whose ingredients are made of food-grade concentrates, meaning that its ingredients come from natural foods and herbs, since the body also metabolizes them more easily than it does synthetic components. Try to avoid supplements that contain fillers, dyes, binders, or any other unnecessary ingredients. The reason those are used is because they're cheaper, and there are bigger profits and more marketing dollars which create more influence. It can be a vicious cycle. The product label on a supplement consists of a statement of identity, a structure/function claim, the form the product takes, gel, liquid, capsule, directions on how to take it, a supplement fact panel, a list of other ingredients, and the name and address of the manufacturer. We'll take them one by one. Statement of Identity. The statement of identity tells you the name of the supplement or what it is. For example, vitamin D, B complex, or melatonin, and identifies it as a vitamin, a mineral, a dietary supplement, etc. Structure/function claim. The structure/function claim tells what the supplement does or what its health benefits are. By law, the structure/function claim can't say that a supplement treats or cures a disease, but it can set out what role or function the supplement will play in your body. Form of product and net contents. This identifies whether the supplement is a capsule, a gel, a liquid, or a powder, and how much or how many the bottle contains. Directions for use. This tells how you're supposed to take the product, once a day, twice daily, once a week, and so on. Supplement facts panel. Here you'll find the serving size, a capsule, 2 tablets, along with a list of active ingredients, and the total percentage of the recommended daily intake the supplement provides for each ingredient. If there's an asterisk in the daily value column for any ingredient, it means the manufacturer hasn't determined a daily value. Other ingredients. The list tells you what inactive ingredients were used to create and manufacture the supplement. On this list, you'll find ingredients like binders, fillers, coatings, water, and gelatin. Again, try to avoid supplements with too many inactive ingredients in them. Product manufacturer. What it says, the name and address of the manufacturer. How to take supplements. Check with your doctor before taking supplements. As with all issues pertaining to diet, nutrition, and health, make sure your doctor knows if you are taking a high dose of any nutritional supplement. Also, remind your doctor of any prescribed medications you take, as some supplements can interfere with dosages or cause side effects. Take supplements with meals. Try not to take supplements on an empty stomach. Take them with meals, as this helps your body absorb them more easily. If you supplement your diet with vitamins A and E, beta-carotene, or essential fatty acids, try to take them with whatever foods you eat that have the highest fat content. Divide the doses up so that you parcel your intake over the course of the day. If you take them all at once, your body might not know how to respond. Avoid taking mineral supplements with high-fiber meals. Fiber can interfere with your body's ability to absorb minerals. Avoid taking supplements with too many inactive ingredients. This means reading the label carefully and avoiding supplements that contain sweeteners, binders, coatings, fillers, preservatives, or added sugars. Eating and working out. An average day. Breakfast, 6 a.m., 7 a.m. I wake up and immediately drink 20 ounces of water with electrolytes. I shower, then go downstairs and make some variation of a smoothie. Typically, it contains blueberries, bananas, seeds, and nuts. It's nutrient-dense, high in fat, high in protein, and high in calories. Workout snacks. 8 a.m., 9 a.m., 10 a.m. I work out. In between, I continue drinking a lot of water with electrolytes. As soon as I'm done, and always within 20 minutes, I'll drink a protein shake, one scoop of TB12 protein powder and a glass of almond milk, along with my TB12 electrolytes. All-day energy boosters, 11 a.m. If I feel the urge, before lunch I'll have some TB12 snacks, which are raw, vegan, organic, gluten-free, and dairy-free. Lunch, 12 p.m., 1 p.m. Lunch is often a piece of fish, but always with lots of vegetables. I make sure most of what I eat is alkalizing. Afternoon energy boosters, 2 p.m., 3 p.m., 4 p.m., 5 p.m. I might have another protein drink, a protein bar, or fruit. I never go that long without snacking, whether it's chips and guacamole, hummus, raw vegetables, nuts, homemade crackers, TB12 snacks, or fruit, grapes, a banana, an apple. Throughout the day, I keep drinking as much water as I can, always with electrolytes. If I've worked out really hard, I might have an extra protein shake. I'm never lacking for protein, and some days I'll have up to 3 or 4 scoops of protein powder. Dinner, 6 p.m., 7 p.m. Dinner is another nutrient-dense meal that includes a lot of vegetables. I don't really drink tea, but I might drink a cup of bone broth. Sometimes I'll have another protein shake at night if I know I'm working out hard the next morning. The TB12 grocery list. Fish, meat, and poultry. At TB12, we recommend you eat meats and poultry that are organic, grass-fed, free-range, hormone-free, and antibiotic-free. The fish you eat should be wild, hormone-free, and antibiotic-free. As I said earlier, more important than eating organic food is eating real food, washed carefully before you prepare it. Please refer to the accompanying PDF for the complete TB12 grocery list. When I was younger, I had a horrible diet. I ate processed meats, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches on white bread, muffins, donuts, hot dogs, nachos with cheese out of a tin can, breakfast cereal, you name it. I rarely drank water. I mostly drank milk, juice, and soda. I've talked a lot in this book about my improvement over the years, and I believe a big reason is the changes I've made in my nutrition. Looking back, why wasn't I as good as I could have been in high school? Why was I a late bloomer? Why couldn't I compete with those other guys? I really didn't give myself a chance based on the diet I was following. One reason I've improved over the years is that the foods I eat today are nutrient-dense, good for me, and I limit anything that could cause inflammation. 12 Fitness and Nutrition Myths. 1. The strength and conditioning model works. The strength and conditioning model, that is, elevate your heart rate and lift weights, is necessary, but it can injure millions of athletes every year. Pliability is the crucial missing leg that will complete and complement your workouts. That's what sustained peak performance means to us at TB12. 2. If you exercise regularly, you can eat whatever you want. A diet high in sugar, salt, fat, gluten, processed, refined, and fast foods undoes many of the benefits of working out. 3. If it's in the supermarket, it must be food. The commercial food industry is in the business of marketing and selling chemicals. Try to eat as much real, organic food as you can, local, fresh foods that reduce inflammation, and limit your intake of toxic chemicals. 4. organic food costs more than anyone should pay.